Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to Difficult Conversations, where we tackle taboo topics in a safe space through empowerment and education. The information on this podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be considered professional mental health advice.
On this episode, I want us to talk about a little bit about the things that our parents did and the things our family used to do that have kind of, we've noticed, have negative impact on us and our behavior and maybe even other people's behavior, and how we are planning on not passing that down to our kids. How do you feel about that?
How I feel?
Don't ask the therapist. Come on now. No.
I want to say something about that. I know in our podcast, I intend to use the word therapy a lot. And I recognize that therapy is not for everyone. That's one. Secondly, not everybody has the privilege to actually seek out therapy or have the financial family safety to do that. So I just want to create that disclaimer before I use a lot of it. So in this episode, I'm going to be using a lot of that. So I just want to give you guys a heads up on that. I think the thing about generational cycle is like one of those things that like your parents had said to you earlier. And you're like, if I have my own kids, I'm never going to do that. Mm-hmm. So it's more like those things. Like, for example, in America, it's like when they say, do you have McDonald's money? It's like every parent is like, yes, I have McDonald's money for my children, because my parents always used to say that to me. Uh-huh. Or if they say, you know, go to Target, don't look at anything, don't touch anything, mm-hmm. just we're going to go in and get what we want. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of similar to that. And for you as a parent, mm-hmm. what are those generational cycles that you guys are working on breaking mm-hmm. when it comes to your kids? Because I think one of the things that I'm sure you always say about your kid is like, you have one that is very like head on, have our own boundaries. Mm-hmm. And then you have the one that is like very like yourself, very timid, very quiet, very calm and collective. Like, what are those generational cycles that you guys mm-hmm. are working on breaking as a parent?
I think these things are like so insidious, right? That like you don't even recognize that you are living out your experiences in childhood. And I don't even know if I wanted to call it trauma. I know, you know, you say that a lot of things are trauma and stuff like that, but it's just certain situations where like, you're like, whoa, where did Mardia Wako come from? You know what I mean?
Yes.
And like you yes. say it mm-hmm. and then you like, that sounded exactly like my mother.
Exactly.
You know? Mm-hmm. And I think I don't spend the time to sit down and be like, okay, why did I say that to her? And where did that come from? Mm. I might like, you know, make a mental note and be like, oh, maybe you shouldn't say that next time. But my question, I guess, for you guys is, at that point, have you already done the mental damage?
So I have actually a story. And okay. then you guys can tap on that. So I was talking to one of my nephew, I think a couple of months ago. Mm-hmm. And we were having this conversation. I'm noticing that I'm getting triggered in the conversation. And then he brought it back and how that trigger made him not feel, but like how it sounded. So I heard mm-hmm. myself from his mouth, like, whoa, is that what I said? Mm-hmm. And then usually what I do is that I hang up the phone and then I just like walk away, and so I can process it alone, mm-hmm. not to kind of deal with the conversation while it's happening. So that day I sat with him and acknowledged myself, acknowledged and took accountability in how I said it and apologized for it. And I said, I am sorry. I just realized how that sounded like. And I'm seeing why, because it was more like I was treating him as 10-year-old version of himself while he's this like young adult person. And he's not the same 10-year-old person that I helped raise, right? And so I'm operating from that frame of mindset where he's still 10 years old to my mind. But he's not. He's a grown person who can make his own decision and apply that. And so when I've heard myself, it's like, I said, I'm sorry. I just realized what I was just doing. Mm-hmm. I was treating you as your 10-year-old version of you. But I didn't realize how much that you're grown as a person and you are a young man technically, I haven't really met you where you are. Yes, you can say I'm a therapist and because of this happened, but I also had to do a lot of internal work mm-hmm. to understand, like, I can't treat my niece and nephew who are in their 20s compared to how I first interacted with them when they were younger. Because now they have their own mindset, they have their own feelings, they have their understanding. So I have to kind of tap in. And so when it comes to like as a being a parent, like you're seeing your child grow from a toddler who's saying no to you to everything. And now like that no is not is changing based on how they read your face, based on how you react. So how do you guys break those generational cycles?
I think for me, there's a lot of mental note that was taken, right? Like when I was a kid, I would be like, oh, if it was me, then I wouldn't do this. But I think acknowledging that therapy is not for everybody, one of the few things that I noticed while going to therapy was that a lot of even the things that my family probably thought they were doing in positive, right? Not just no, it's not always necessarily a negative thing. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's the positive thing. The positive things such as like, oh, you know, I've talked about this before, like, oh, Bonnie's going to be something great someday. Mm-hmm. That put an unnecessary, unrealistic expectation on your child. It's good to make them feel like they're great, right? Mm-hmm. But then also making them understand that you're just an average Joe. Like, you're mm-hmm. cool. Like, if you are living your 9-to-5 life, and if you're happy and content and you're a good member of society, that's good. That's mm-hmm. normal. That's mm-hmm. okay. That's more than okay. You're succeeding. Yep. You know what I mean? Versus like feeling like there's this expectation from you to kind of do something epic. So mm-hmm. everything that's not epic feels like a failure. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that was not done in with the intention to, like, you know, put this pressure on me. Or, and it's not just me. There's a lot. There's actually a saying that kids that have been told that they're great or they're going to be great or they're, you know, they mm-hmm. they sometimes when they're children and they show this exponential, maybe they're doing better than their peers. Mm-hmm. So the teachers and the parents and everybody just zones in and focuses on their intelligence or their whatever. They tend to do worse than their peers later on in life because they can't keep up with the expectation, mm-hmm. right? So that's one thing I've noticed that, like, I'm like, no, you can't hyper-focus on your child's specific talent, mm-hmm. which is why, like, for example, actually my son had his winter parent-teacher conference, and the teacher was telling us, like, you know, Yusuf is the only one in his class that can actually read a book from front to back, mm-hmm. and he's like sits around and like his peers sit around him and he like reads the book for them. And she's like, you know, you guys should entertain the idea of like maybe getting him tested to be able to skip a class. I was like, no. Mm-hmm. He's not going to skip a class. There's no point. Mm-hmm. Like, that year is not going to save him anything in the long run. But then in that year of, like, where he's not in the same age group, then he's going to feel behind. He mm-hmm. might be ahead of his...
Academically,
his peers. Yeah. But he's not the same as, of you know, the kindergartners, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. So he's going to go from being the ahead kid to the behind kid, mm-hmm. which is not good. Mm-hmm. I don't want him to play catch up all his life, mm-hmm. you know? Let them meet him where he is versus him trying to meet other people. So that's one thing. Even noticing that, hey, the positive affirmations that you're doing to your kid might be damaging to them versus, like, you know, like, just not always the negative things.
Yeah.
Secondly, the negative aspects of, like, hey, making comments about the kid's appearance, like, mm-hmm. not hyper fixating on the kids. And this also could be in the positive category of, like, not hyper fixating on, like, your daughter's beauty or your son's beauty, mm-hmm. or, you know, or their skin tone, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, she's so yellow boned, yeah. or she's so mm-hmm. light skin, yeah. oh, her hair is so smooth, yeah. and so long. Yeah. That's our mm-hmm. community's thing, yeah. right? Like, the Eurocentric beauty standards, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, not hyper fixating on those things and not hyper fixating on their flaws either, mm-hmm. being like, oh, this, or not even flaws, like hyper fixating on the fact that they're not, like, for my daughter, mm-hmm. I fight against this a lot, where she's not, like, lay down and take it kind of chick. She's a 2-year-old, sassy. She will set the world on fire and I'll let her. That's, and I want to be able to embrace that instead of being like, oh no, you know, she's, she doesn't listen or mali mali. No, talk to her in a way she'll understand. Explain to her in her language. Of course, I am no gentle parenter, you know, I am oromo, I'm like old school in the sense that I have discipline, I have rules, I have regulations, I have to be a respectful person and so on and so forth, but your personality is not a flaw. Like your personality is who you are and I'll meet you where you are. I'm not going to try to bend you and contort you into fit into make my life convenient. You know what I mean?
I think, so listen to you, I feel like one of the biggest things I have to fight against as a parent is all of that, like, community standards and, you know, judging your child based on X, Y, and Z or whatever. And then, but the other thing is just, like, pigeonholing your child, right? This is the shy one. This is the... not obnoxious, but, like, this is the fighter, you know? And just... putting a label on the child even before they're able to grow up and decide that label for themselves. And honestly, kids really, they notice these things. They notice that.
They become what you call them.
Yeah, they become like, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And like my oldest, she'll call you out on it, right? They'll call you out and be like, okay, well, you let her or you let to do A, B, and C, and you know, you never let me do this, and and stuff like that. So when so the other day I was like, you know what, let me implement something, you know, let me sit the oldest down and talk to her and have her be like, okay, like, tell me, let's walk through or let's talk through. She was like having this meltdown and she was very emotional and stuff like that. So just me and her, we went in the closet and we just talked, and she's, and the amount of like emotional intelligence surprised me. Right? And I'm just like, whoa. Like, and she's able to define or like explain.
Communicate
what she's feeling, why she felt that way, why like she felt like her sister was doing A, B, and C to her. And like me personally, even in my big age, I'm not able to be like, okay. And I was so like proud of her, but then I was also like I don't know, not threatened, but I'm just like, well, like, how do I handle that? You know, as somebody that doesn't, is not outwardly emotional, or like show a lot of like emotion and stuff like that. She's a like a big contrast to me, and so I had to work through my problems first and be like, okay, let me just let her go through it and figure it out, and we were able to, you know, figure out what she wanted me to do, and she's like, you know what, I want you to get the younger sister and talk to her as well and explain to her and basically facilitate us talking to each other, right, and that she hurt my feelings and did A, B, and C. So it was an eye-opening experience.
Some of the thing that I always say is that, like, children, what it for parents, this is for our parent listeners, are like, your children's going to trigger the part of your childhood that you are not getting your emotional needs not be met. And when that happens, you should reassess. When you're like, oof, that hurts here, and I'm feeling so strongly about it, it's like, I need to go reevaluate myself. Like, what is something about this situation that's bringing up for me? And validate the fact is that somebody said this. I am having so many examples right now. There was a lady, she said she was watching a video and then she just felt like something was not right within her while she's watching this video. It wasn't about the video. It's about her own emotional triggers that happened while she was watching a video. She kept going back to the video, back and forth, back and forth. And then she said, I had to realize that I didn't have this level of childhood safety that I couldn't watch that video. And I was getting annoyed watching that person tell a story about their childhood. And so I had to leave that. So when you both are talking about how do I break generational cycle, is that the things that was not available to you, you're allowing your child to do it. You're honoring that instead of kind of like putting a negative reinforcement on them. You're like, you want to? Go ahead. Because sometimes children, when they, the first, the, what is the first word children say when they are like able to speak?
No.
Right?
Yeah.
That no, wallahi, that is a boundary.
Yeah.
That is the biggest boundaries that we don't see it as. But then what do? We dim it as they continue to grow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when they are able to understand the society that they're in, now they no longer say no.
I can't think of how many times I've said, like, are you going to say no to me as a parent, you know? Yeah. And that, I don't know, that feels so, so uncomfortable. Wallahi, it's just like, because we kind of superimpose it on the whole, like, respect for parents, right? And how we grow up, it's like, your parents' word was the final say, and you didn't have any way to be like, let me explain this to you, right? Even to this day, like, our relationship with my parents is like, you don't really be like, okay, this is what I think and this is what we should do.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, what do you want me to do?
Yeah. No, when you were speaking, you kind of triggered a thought in my brain because, you know, when you're a kid and you feel like your parents are talking and then they tell you, why are you quiet? I'm saying all of these things. And then when you start talking, oh, you're responding back to me, huh? Yeah.
It's like you can't win.
You can't win. Exactly. Yeah. And I think it's for me in my growing up process, like there's a lot of things that I can see myself getting triggered by, but it's not necessarily by my kids. It's by my nieces, right? Because they're closer. Like they're doing the triggering for me before my kids. So hopefully I kind of get therapized out of it before my kids get to that age.
That's true.
But like I'm noticing that, like, for example, when my nieces get to have like these things, they ask, they have this balls to ask, be like, hey mom, can I go do these things that I never thought I could even ask because, you know,
you didn't think it was available to you.
I didn't think it was available to me. So when I see that, I have this very harsh and negative reaction to it, but I'm removed from them that they don't, I'm not like affecting them. It's just I'm experiencing it. And I'm also realizing, and alhamdulillah, for some reason, I always say this, like, God has put me in positions and in spaces where people challenged my thought process. So that when I first got pregnant with my first son, the first thing I did was go to therapy. That's like the most consistent therapy that I've had started then. Because I was like, I don't want to parent from a space of trauma where I am more of a friend or more of like,
I'm authoritative,
not necessarily in authority, because I thought I was going to be more lenient towards my child because I didn't want to be so strict as, like, you know, how I was raised. And I was like, but that's not healthy either. You know, you don't want to be a friend to your kids. You want to be a parent to your kids. Your kids need parents, not friends.
Yeah.
And then being able to understand, like, I think that's the best thing parents can do, is that especially if you've gone through something, especially if you've had, like, if even if it's not the most unhealthy upbringing, but it's not the most healthy upbringing. If you feel like there's residue of some sort of thing that has gone, that you feel like you could have done better, or that could have been done better for you, it's better to work it out in therapy, so that you're, when you come and your kids are doing these things, you're able to step back and say, okay, am I gonna let this thing happen just because I didn't get to do it? Or am I going to process and say, okay, what's the right thing to do? Right?
Yeah.
For me, for example, let's say, for example, if my daughter wants to go to homecoming.
Yeah.
Right? I never went to homecoming, and I'm just throwing out a random example. My daughter is two. She's not going to homecoming in a long time. But am I going to say yes just because I didn't get to go, right? Or because I wasn't even allowed to ask that question? Or am I going to say no because where's my no and where's my yes coming from? What's the reasoning behind it? I have to justify it in my head so that if she asks why, I have to be able to give a reasonable why.
Which she will ask for why.
Yeah, and I think I do believe no is no. Mm-hmm. My son says it too. No is no. Mm-hmm. It's a good answer. Mm-hmm. Like, I think no because I said so is a good answer. Mm-hmm. As long as you don't use it all the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There are certain things where I can sit there and explain to my child the fire burns. Mm-hmm. But if that's not computing for him, maybe mm-hmm. if it's because he's too young or something like that, mm-hmm. he should understand mommy said no and no is no.
Yeah.
And that's fine. Until we're at an age where we can sit there and have that conversation. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So I feel like parents should be able to, one, set a space for your kids to disagree. Mm-hmm. I think your kids should be able to disagree with you to a certain degree mm-hmm. without consequence. Mm-hmm. So like when I tell Yusuf and Nafi no, if they don't like it and if that's something that's valuable to them, even at age of 2 and 4, mm-hmm. they say, no, mommy, I want to do this. No. Why mm-hmm. no? But I want to, you know, and especially mm-hmm. Yusuf, now he's learning to push back. Mm-hmm. So I sit down, I regulate his feelings. I'm like, okay, Yusuf, I understand you want this, but this is why we're not doing it. Mm-hmm. Okay? No, and you know, he's a 4-year-old, so he mm-hmm. fixates on that thing. So you go, let him disagree, you know, give it that point of view. Mm-hmm. And then at some point, bring down the wall and be like, okay, I explained. Mm-hmm. This is what it is. You said your piece. We tried to, you know, compromise. Mm-hmm. And if none of these work, you have 2 options. Either you do this thing or you do this thing. Mm-hmm. Which one do you want to do?
Yeah.
Sigale?
Yeah.
So I think.
And I think options work for kids.
Options work.
Very well.
Mm-hmm.
Very yeah. well.
Yeah. Just being able to give them room mm-hmm. to be individuals. Give them room to disagree. Don't be an authoritarian household where the kid doesn't have any value and any voice, right? The kids should be able to have the illusion of choice.
We talked about how being indecisive mm-hmm. as an adult happens mm-hmm. and we become self-sabotaging. We do these things, right? Mm-hmm. All those behaviors started when those conversations are happening, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. All of those, like, I can't decide because I'm doing according to what my parent told me.
Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the biggest things, like, I'm working through with my oldest right now. Because, like, even, like, as small as getting dressed for school, right? So I'll be like, okay, Dia, pick out an outfit. And so she'll be like, okay, which one should I wear? I was like, whatever you want. She's like, okay. She's like, oh, which one do you want? I was like, no.
She's asking you.
She's asking me, yeah. She's like, which one do you want? I said, no. It's what you want. You pick.
Yep.
You know, and so getting them to used to the idea of making those decisions for themselves mm-hmm. and just know that like every kid has a different personality, a different amal, you can say that like how I react to one kid is completely different to how I react to the other, mm-hmm. you know, because they both need 2 different things from me, mm-hmm. you know, and so I can't do like a blanket thing. And so my oldest, she's, you know, obviously going to, she has online classes and she has Quran that she's learning. And then the other one, she's 3, so she's too young. And so a lot of my time, it's like explaining to the oldest that, okay, well, she's not ready for this yet. Mm. You know, this is something you have to do.
Right.
You know what I mean? And just talking with them through those little things, because mm-hmm. they might kind of register it as it's not fair. Right.
Yeah.
Like I'm having to do this and she's not doing, mm-hmm. you know, X, Y, and Z. Yeah. But the other thing is I want to stress that like kids are an amana from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You know, this is I think of it as like they're a loan to you. Right? Like this is something that Allah has given you. And so you have to kind of care for it in the best way that you can. And then realizing how like your baggage and stuff like that might affect them and getting them to like the best outcome that you can get them to. So
definitely. And I think when I say, and I want to clarify a little bit, when I say the illusion of choice is that there is also this thing called decision fatigue, right? Mm-hmm. So kids, they have to understand that their realm of reality and their realm of like power is a certain level. Like, for example, mm-hmm. I knew that from a very young age that like what my neighbors had, I couldn't have. Not mm-hmm. necessarily neighbors, but my school friends mm-hmm. had, I couldn't have. We didn't have the same money.
mm-hmm. right? So for my parents, they would take, when I would go shopping, they didn't take me where the other people went shopping. They took me to this place and they said, this is the choice. Mm-hmm. This from here, you yeah. can choose,
yeah.
not from here. You mm-hmm. can't, even if you wanted to, you can't. You know, so that illusion of choice is that you take them where they can make the choices without like boundaries, like mm. without, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But then you have already put that boundary ahead of time so that you are letting them explore within that time, that dynamic. For mm-hmm. example, when you are talking about clothes, for my kid, I don't normally say like, go to your closet and pick whatever you want. Mm-hmm. I say, okay, Yusuf, you have to pick a shirt, you have to pick a pants, you have to pick underwear, and you have to pick a sweatshirt because it's mm-hmm. cold. Mm-hmm. So there's that boundary there's yeah. that's already created because mm-hmm. he can't say, oh, I'm just going to wear a t-shirt and go. That's mm-hmm. not a choice. Mm-hmm. You have to have these four things. That's the boundary that I've set already. Mm-hmm. And then from that, you can go to each of the drawers and be mm-hmm. able to pick one. So the mm-hmm. illusion of choice is that he thinks he's doing it on his own. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I've already set out these lists mm-hmm. that he has to pick. He has to kind of. Will keep from. Him safe. Yeah, yeah to mm-hmm. choose from that mm-hmm. will keep him safe. Yeah. So I don't think that not necessarily mm-hmm. what you're doing is wrong or mm-hmm. anything. I'm just saying, like, when I say illusion, I don't want to make, you know what I'm saying? I want to mm-hmm. make sure I'm clarifying what mm-hmm. illusion of choice looks like in mm-hmm. my household.
Yeah. So it sounds like, you know, therapy is part of generational cycle that you're doing.
Yeah.
And you are also kind of providing a way to regulate
self-awareness,
providing choices for your child to mm-hmm. make sure that they're able to decide and setting boundaries and respecting their boundaries mm-hmm. with you as a parent mm-hmm. in a way that mm-hmm. and knowing
think,
that
I
too.
I think one last thing I want to, I know we're wrapping up, but one last thing I want to also touch upon is the modeling aspect of parenting. And making sure that, like, if you're saying one thing to your child, you're not doing completely the opposite thing.
Be consistent with your kids. Be
super consistent. And if you know, one day they're not able to do this, then mm-hmm. the next day should be the exact same thing too. Right. Yeah. Because if you are sending mixed messages, that's really going to confuse the child.
Yep.
Yeah. And they'll call you out on it.
They also don't trust you because they're like, well, mommy said this, but I know she's going to do that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of learning to also, like I said earlier, learning to apologize when you recognize your, because I think that what it teaches them, the emotional safety that you're creating with them, mm-hmm. when you recognize your shortcoming with your kids as they grow older, yeah. not right now, mm-hmm. but even now, if you do, you can go ahead and do that. Mm-hmm. But when the more they grow, the more you see and you apologize, you're building trust. Mm-hmm. You bring emotional safety in, so they'll come to yep. you more yeah. with more things. So I think this is a way of kind of, I think this is a conversation we might have to continue to have.
Yeah.
But this is a starting of those generational cycles that we are continuing to break so we can have sustainable, strong, brilliant, resilient children
yeah. in this world. I want to add one more thing about that forgiveness and start apology. Mm-hmm. When you make a mistake, acknowledging that you made a mistake and mm-hmm. saying, I'm sorry. When you overreact, when you're feeling like you're being triggered and you acted from a space of trigger instead of like mm-hmm. the like disproportionately to what the child did,
yep.
apologizing, acknowledging why you did it this way. And then that way they can do it themselves too, right?
Mm-hmm.
And being able to go to them instead of them asking you to mm-hmm. like going to them, be like, hey, so-and-so, I thought, you know, maybe mommy was a little loud and I'm so sorry. Mm-hmm. And when they call you out on it, owning up to it, mm-hmm. you know, because yes. they would say, I'm sorry, mommy.
Don't be defensive.
For doing this and this, but you should have, you know, done this.
Yeah.
Say, yes, I probably should have. Yep. I'm so sorry.
Yep.
You know, and at the same time also, when you and your husband and you and your wife are communicating,
mm-hmm.
making sure you're modeling what you're teaching for them to do with their peers.
Yeah.
So if you're talking in a tone, if you're talking in a volume, if mm-hmm. you're communicating, and if the other person is feeling sad, mm-hmm. making sure you're apologizing and being in tune and so on and so forth, mm-hmm. they see you guys interact with each other mm-hmm. and they practice that with their peers.
They do.
Just making sure that we are practicing what we preach.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I think that's, we're going to leave it there. And this has been a difficult conversation. So, assalamu alaikum.
Join the conversation in the comment section or on our social media pages. We do not have all the answers, and our biggest goal is to kick off the conversation and get it started. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala accept our efforts and use us for catalysts of change.